You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Good in the back. All right, questions for Kenny? First one will be Chris and Ian. We got the microphones. We got ways.
In person press conferences. Problems.
Heard you had to wear pants today.
I did.
All right, I think we're live, Christopher. Welcome to On the Bench. I'm Brent Sinone. I got Chris Nee joining me. This is the first time I've hosted the podcast in, what, like 2 months? I'm a little rusty here.
It's like riding a bike, buddy. Just hop right back on.
So before we get going, and this episode is going to be Chris and I basically kind of putting a wrap on season preview content that we've been doing periodically here in the last month or so, but then also getting into the Notre Dame preview as FSU is just two sleeps away from facing Notre Dame on Sunday evening. Should be a pretty crazy environment at Doak Campbell Stadium. But first, Chris, I got to ask, why did you ask Kenny Dillingham about his pants the other day?
I was told that Kenny inquired if the press conference was going to be via the lovely Zoom or in person. And when he found out it was in person, he realized, well, I definitely have to wear pants then.
I mean, that's fair. Are you wearing pants right now?
Bringing a little lightheartedness to it, buddy. Just trying to have some fun with it. It's not all as serious as we make it.
That's very true. So speaking of it not being serious, of it being fun, like I said, Chris, it's going to be a pretty ruckus environment on Sunday evening. I don't think they've announced it to be a sellout yet. They're still working on that, but the student section has sold out of tickets, and we're going to see at least 70,000, probably closer to 80,000 and close to reaching the capacity amount on Sunday evening. Obviously the first time FSU has been able to be at capacity in more than a year. A big opponent, only show in town on Sunday. So what are your thoughts on the environment, what we're going to see coming up here in a couple of days?
Well, we'll probably be the best crowd since the VTech game. So it's been a while. Hopefully it endures more than the VTech game, because obviously that didn't get going very well at all. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, football's so much better with people in the stands. It's an enjoyable experience. At the end of the day, football games, especially at a university, are like a family reunion to some degree. You're getting with friends, you're getting with people you haven't seen in a while, you're getting with people from out of town, you're having a little fun. Hopefully your team wins, and man, then you're going to have a hell of a lot of fun. But, you know, I'm just looking forward to it. I love the game of football. I enjoy it. It's one of those things I did as a kid growing up. I used to go with my older brother when he was here as a student. Obviously, I did it as a student, both as a person covering games and a person just attending the university. And then, you know, I've had the luxury as an adult to at times go just with the family when I was doing the state of Florida recruiting stuff, and obviously working a ton of games over the last two decades. So I love it. It's an awesome thing to do. It's a fun Saturday afternoon. Win or lose, it's still enjoyable to see people that you call friends and to just hang out with people. And there's memories made in there. There's things. I mean, we talked about, you know, openers a couple shows ago, and I hearkened back to the Louisiana Tech game in the late 90s, you know. Favorite game in Doak, 96 UF comes to mind. So, you know, you're talking about things from 25 years ago, for example. And obviously there's been a heck of a lot of good memories in between 25 years ago and now for me.
Richie Barnes, host of Double Fries, No Slaw, just chimed in on Periscope, where I'm having this go live as well, just to see how that goes. He said it's going to be amazing when Swag Surfing comes on just before kickoff.
Don't do that, Stuart. Don't do it to us. No.
Don't put that evil on us, Richie. Don't do it. Remember the
now,
time
if they're
Chris...
winning, open the second half with it. Why not? Hey, have a little fun.
No, just I don't think you want that anywhere around the environment on Sunday evening. At least not the first game of the season. Maybe ease into Swag Surfing a little bit.
It's amazing the things that permanently damp us like that just carry with us into our...
It is. It's a Pavlovian dog kind of effect. And I got abused on Twitter that one time that I didn't know that that was the actual, like, there was a song. Like, I didn't get that the song associated and then the swags, whatever. We need to go through history here. We can stay.
It's the first song on your playlist now.
I mean, we are allowed to use. We do have the rights to use it anytime we want on the bench. We've been given permission. So that's cool. Also on Sunday, get into that a little bit, Chris. Josh and Zach had a really good recruiting preview podcast. I think 2 days ago, I would implore everyone to go check that out. It's in depth, it's thorough, it's informative, give you a good idea of what is going to be on the docket this weekend. It's a huge recruiting weekend for FSU. But real quick, Chris, to add in that there's going to be a lot of recruiting, and then there's also going to be commemoration of Bobby Bowden. That's just going to add to the importance of this game, the environment, and just the overall atmosphere, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, under the lights, flyover, packed house, only show in town, only thing in college football on Sunday. I mean, it doesn't get much better. I think atmosphere-wise, it has potential of being like that Oklahoma game about 10 years ago where that place was jumping. It was electric. I mean, the Notre Dame game in what was it, 14 in Doak, yes. Notre Dame? That was a heck of an atmosphere. Those are some of the ones I think of more recently where I hope Sunday can be like that.
Okay,
but for that to happen, FSU has to compete.
Well, let's get into the game preview, aspects of FSU-Notre Dame. So Notre Dame comes in as the number 9 team in the country, according to the AP poll. FSU is unranked. And right now, I think as of this morning, as we record this on Friday morning, Chris, Notre Dame's the line is down to Notre Dame giving 7 points. So it keeps kind of moving lower and lower. I don't know what to make of that. I don't know where that change is coming from, but it opened at like, what, 10.5 points or so?
Yeah,
so
it was, when I was in Vegas in late July, it was 9.5, I believe. I had just dipped under 10 at that point. So, yeah, it's been a slow climb down.
I don't know if someone knows something that we don't know or whatnot, but, yeah, it's a touchdown favorite for Notre Dame right now. Let's start off with FSU's offense versus Notre Dame's defense. So some stats here, and then I'm going to get Chris to go into personnel. But Notre Dame is coming off a season in which they were 56 nationally in yards allowed per game with 5.56. They do lose a couple of key defenders in the front seven. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, I think he was number 6 last year. He was the hybrid safety linebacker. He went in the second round to the Cleveland Browns of this past year's NFL draft. Talent level probably beyond a second round pick that the NFL just didn't know like whether to use him as like a hybrid safety or a linebacker. And he's going to be a very good pro in my opinion because he just flies around and hits people. And that plays in the NFL. You'll succeed for a long time to be athletic and to be able to hit and strike. They also lose their sack leader. I'm going to butcher his name. Edet Kunubo Ogundeji. I think I got that okay. It wasn't smooth, but we got there. So they lose a fair amount. But, Chris, maybe in the personnel who's coming back, they do bring a lot back in that front seven still. And then also maybe you want to start off with this dude here because I know you love him, Kyle Hamilton at safety.
Well, they lost, I think it was 9 total to the NFL draft last year, and that's on both offense and defense. And it was fairly split among the two groups. Defensively, yeah, it starts with Kyle Hamilton. He's one of the best safeties in the country. He's a guy who's capable of taking away a decent portion of the field. Very good in run support, very good against the pass. He's a well-balanced safety. He's a guy who's super effective. He completely runs that back end. The other name at safety is Houston Griffith, familiar to FSU recruiting fans. Mm-hmm. He's a guy FSU, you know, pursued very heavily and was ultra involved with. He's now a graduate senior for them to make you feel old. So that's kind of their safety. So those guys kind of help control it in the back end. I think their corners are—I don't want to use the word necessarily vulnerable, but I think that's a place where you may try to attack, especially if they're going to be willing to give you one-on-ones. And Kenny Dillingham referenced on Tuesday in this week's Monday press conference that FSU has to win one-on-ones. That's an overriding theme from last year to this year, something they didn't do effectively. Their starting corners will be Clarence Lewis, Cam Hart. Are the expectations for those two? Talented guys. I mean, Notre Dame doesn't recruit bad football players, but I do think when I look at the defense of the 11, if I had to pick a segment, a group that I feel like is somebody you can go after, it's those two. But obviously having a guy like Hamilton in the back end can help make up for one of those guys if they're struggling on a day. Now, where FSU is going to have trouble with Notre Dame's defense is the front seven. Notre Dame's defense is always very talented in the front seven. And despite the injury to one of their expected starting linebackers, their linebacker group is still excellent. Drew White, who's Mike linebacker for them, he's a prototypical tackle-collecting Notre Dame linebacker. He has a tendency to be around the ball, finish plays effectively, does a really good job. Jack Kaiser is a rover type, which in their scheme is a little bit more of a run support linebacker type against teams that are trying to run it. He's very effective. He can come down and do a lot. And then off the edge, I think Isaiah Foskey is a guy who he did some things for them last year. He was effective in a reserve role. He's moved into the starter role at Viper. He's a 6'5", 260-pound speed rush, big body, capable of being a run support, pass rush guy. He's going to be a handful. The offensive tackles will be challenged by him. They go more with that 3-4 front with the Viper coming down, making a 4-man front at times. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, but the Tua cousin, Myron Tagovailoa Amosa, who's one of the DNs.
I think that was better than my Adekunobo Ogundeji. So
yeah, I wish we could just like create an audio, pronunciation guide and just hit the button and let it say it for us. That would be phenomenal. Get on that, Snow. That's next. That's what we'll do with our.
All right, I'll work it as I'm getting Josh Newberg messaging me in the middle of a live recording saying he can't watch the video. I don't know what you want me to do about that, Josh. Like, figure it out. I don't know what you want me to do, Berg.
Myron's big body DN, run support guy. He can kind of play any role along that front four that they want him to play, front three that they want him to play. He can be a strong side end. He can be a guy that can push a pass a little bit. He can certainly slide to the inside and be effective. Kurt Hinnish, very talented, big body interior lineman. He's their nose. And Jason Ademilola, I think is how you say it.
Nailed
it. He's their true D tackle. He's 6'3", 280. That front four group is really, really talented, with Viper being included in that front four. I think that's going to be an issue for FSU. I think FSU's offensive line is going to be tested regularly and often. I think we're going to see FSU packing it in quite a bit with maybe two tight end sets or at least a back ready to chip out of backfield or even a tight end set in the backfield as essentially an H-back fullback type helping out there. I think that's something they're going to have to really deal with. I don't want to rush too far ahead because we're going to talk about things that we think is kind of a key to the game. But I think the fact that Notre Dame's front seven should be super effective to FSU, I think the way you counter that isn't necessarily max protection or trying to block it up. It may be using their aggressiveness and their success against them. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that later.
Well, this will be kind of a good transition into it because their defensive coordinator is Marcus Freeman. He replaced Clark Lee, who went to Vanderbilt to be the head coach there, took Barton Simmons with him. Marcus Freeman had a very successful run at Cincinnati from, I think it was 2017 to this past year. And Cincinnati, one of the best defenses in the country at all levels and among like the top like one to three group of five defenses the last couple of years as well. As a UCF alum and watched UCF face those Cincinnati defenses, they're super versatile and able to kind of change schemes within the course of a game plan to make things really difficult and be very, very hybrid focused, very aggressive. I will say this about Marcus Freeman. I'll pull up some stats here real quick. This is obviously new to see how he's going to use his personnel at Notre Dame, but at Cincinnati, they ran man coverage 24.8% of the time, according to True Media. That was 11th among all FBS teams. So they're going to run a ton of man. That's because they're aggressive. They blitz a lot, and they're pretty successful when blitzing. Their pressure rate when they do blitz is 22nd nationally from 2017 to 2020, Marcus Freeman's career there. They're fine giving up a lot of yards through the air, or at least allowing teams to be aggressive and trying to beat the man-to-man stuff. Average air yards allowed in Marcus Freeman's tenure, 10.65, 116th nationally. But they defended those passes well, so you're able to create pressure and create basically 50-50 balls in the air. Their DBs are pretty good. They won a lot of the time. Their third down defense, 35.8% conversion rate allowed. That's 25th nationally. So basically, it's a very aggressive defense. They're going to blitz a lot. They're going to be multiple with what they do and attack a lot with their linebackers and kind of change between three and four man fronts, which a lot of teams do nowadays. But their goal is to force you into third and long and go man to man outside and blitz you and basically force defense or offenses into bad throws. And they do that at a really high level at Cincinnati. Chris, what are your thoughts on just Mike Norvell's familiarity with Marcus Freeman? They've had some pretty good battles over the years when Mike was at Memphis and Freeman was at Cincinnati.
Well, I think he understands that one-on-ones is probably the key to this all.
Yeah,
kind of when you're one-on-one. They've hit on that point for a month now straight, and it's one of those things coming off last season they set out to resolve. That's why they went and got Andrew Parchment, why they recruited Malik McClain. Those are guys they hope can win one-on-ones. And then, you know, a guy like Kentron or a guy like Darian is another guy who they hope potentially can win one-on-ones. They have to do it.
Darian Williamson-Hive.
Yeah, that's true. You're president. I forgot. Mm-hmm. They're going to give you the opportunities. You got to capitalize. You're only going to get a handful of them, you know, maybe a half dozen in a game. You better hit on more than three of them. That's the thing. They're going to give you those opportunities. And I think FSU is going to set up shop plays. I don't think FSU is going to live a whole lot in the intermediate. I think there's going to be a lot of quick screen work, a lot of running it in different versions and styles, you know, option straight up with the back, some shovel type stuff that's, you know, pass run sort of stuff. They're going to try to keep them off balance. I think they're going to be aggressive with trying to get in the spaces, especially to the edges, trying to get just outside those linebackers, sealing off edges. And, you know, Jordan Travis, who at this point I expect to start and I think will be the primary quarterback of the game. Whoa,
spoiler alert. I was going to ask you that later on. Thanks.
No, sorry. But I think he is going to be a key component of attacking them with the run. But I think via the run, they're going to try to open up some quick passing stuff, some essentially pass option stuff where they get him to the edge and maybe make a quick pass outside depending on how the corner or the safety reads the play. I think that's where FSU is going to try to find their bread and butter offensively. I don't think FSU walks in this game and tries to play straight up offensive football, you know, fundamental basic lineup and try to run after him and
throw it wide.
I don't think you see a lot of that. I think they set up plays like that. No, I don't think they can either. So Freeman's damn good at what he does, though. He's a guy who a lot of people think will be head coach in the next few years, and I'm not here to discount that fact. He did a very, very good job at Cincinnati. And he's got better personnel probably at his disposal at Notre Dame. So I wholeheartedly think he's going to throw something at him. But I do think the familiarity of him creates a great chess match between him, Mike Norvell, and others that have played one another at different coaching stops. It's going to be interesting what they harken back to. What worked at Memphis against Cincinnati? Does Norvell throw that at him? And if he does, is that something that Freeman expects? Because, well, it worked for Memphis against Cincinnati. I think that's one of those little in-game storylines that's going to be enjoyable to follow.
One thing I'll say about the context of Cincinnati versus Memphis back in 2019, going watching, you know, those two teams played twice back-to-back weeks. Mike Norvell did and obviously his personnel, I think, was more established there was more established at that point offensively with him knowing what he had and guys being in his system for multiple years to kind of unleash everything that he wanted to. But Mike Norvell did a really good job of using Cincinnati's aggressiveness on defense against them. That's something that you've alluded to, Chris. You think that's how you have to beat Notre Dame this weekend if you're FSU? I agree totally. Seeing what Mike Norvell did with a lot of screens, a lot of counters, things to basically, if someone's going to be aggressive, you got to try to catch them getting out of their lane or being out of position. A lot of quick throws, too, to the perimeter, maybe some crossing stuff. And basically, you're just trying to beat those man-to-man concepts and hope you get numbers. And then, like you said, win those one-on-one. So that's going to be a big part of the game plan, I would imagine, coming up here on Sunday. Go ahead.
Good example to expound on that is you keep a back end or you keep a tight end in, and they essentially chip block a guy coming off the edge. But when they release, they got to get going. They got to get vertical, got to get downfield, got to get in space, wheel route, whatever the system's going to be. Mm-hmm. The quarterback either has to evade said guy released or get rid of it as he's going to get hit and take the hit and hope that plays effective. That's how they're going to hit plays. It's essentially, what are we willing to sacrifice to try to effectively have a play here? It's not this guy's going to work to a space, sit down, and we're going to hit him. I don't think it's that. I think it's very much, we release that guy. That guy's got a great chance of getting a sack or a tackle for loss or creating havoc in the backfield. Now we got to make that guy either miss or get rid of it before he gets there and hope the play pulls off. I think that's what we're going to see a lot of is, it's almost like tying over and over and over. And some of that, because of Jordan Travis's escapability, is also Travis just playing backyard football and making something happen.
Yeah, you tailor your offense to your strengths. And I think Jordan Travis's mobility, improved passing ability as well, those appear to be strengths and things you can rely on to at least a certain extent right now for Florida State as you go into this game as an underdog. Chris, I'm going to now switch to FSU's defense versus Notre Dame's offense, but I don't want to get into a whole lot of stats from last year just because this group is going to be so different. It's a new quarterback, mostly a new offensive line. The wide receivers that are there are guys who've been around for a while, and I know people covering Notre Dame are extremely high on what that group can do, but those guys have also had a lot of injuries and haven't played a lot in their career. So there's a lot of unknowns for this offense. I'm going to ask you to go over the personnel a little in depth for the listeners. I'm going to go grab coffee refill real quick. So you got the solo for like a minute?
Yeah, I can do it. I got
Alrighty.
It. So if I was a betting man, I would bet on Kevin Austin. He's a veteran wide receiver for Notre Dame. He does not have a lot of career stats, but he is a guy that since the moment he walked on campus there, they believed he was going to be a big deal. He is healthy. He's had a great preseason from all accounts. He's 6'2", 215, athletic outside receiver. They desperately need a receiver to step up. Avery Davis, 5'11", 202, is a veteran wide receiver. He's kind of a dependable guy. He was effective last year, but I don't think he goes from being the guy who was effective last year to being that number one type. I think it's much more likely Kevin Austin becomes that number one wide receiver type for them. Braden Lindsey is also in that conversation, a little bit more veteran, has done some stuff. But if I was betting on a breakout player for Notre Dame offensively in this game, I would put the chips in on Kevin Austin. I think he's super talented. you know, we know who Kyren Williams is. We saw the back of his jersey way too much last year as he was running away from FSU. Chris Tyree is a great speedy complement to him in the backfield. Sebo Flemester, I'm probably butchering that name. I apologize.
That sounds right.
Kind of a third back power guy. They'll use him in the mix, but it's more Williams, Tyree as the attack there. Quarterback Jack Cohn, I know Brendan's going to kind of work on him. He wrote a good bit about upset special, how it's going to happen. Jack Cohn was a big piece of that. Transfer from Wisconsin, didn't play much last year. I believe it was foot or ankle injury that prevented him. And then Graham Mertz went and took his job. That's why he transferred. He's a big quarterback, not much of a threat with the legs. A lot of dink and dunk at Wisconsin. The heat map for the vertical and going deep, not much there, and definitely not to the middle of the field. It'll be interesting. Notre Dame system, different personnel. If that changes, was that a matter of Wisconsin system holding Jack back, or was that Jack's capability in Wisconsin system? That's a big question mark there. Michael Mayer, the tight end for Notre Dame, best player on their entire offense, future NFL pro, one of the best tight ends in college football. He's going to be a pain in the, you know what, for the FSU linebackers. That's a major concern for me with how he matches up to them, how he kind of takes control of the middle of the field, in part opening up running lanes and in part opening up one-on-ones on the outside for the wide receivers to win. And then the O-line, a lot of new faces. Blake Fisher, starting freshman left tackle. I believe that is the first starting freshman left tackle in Notre Dame history. They've had other starting freshman tackles, but I don't think on the left side. Kane Madden, we're all very familiar with, expected to start at right guard. Jarrett Patterson at center is a very talented, experienced player. He's a big piece, kind of the – I would say he's the most solid lug nut on the wheel, holding it together for them. He's kind of the guy that knows what he's doing. The other tackle spot is Josh Lug, veteran. Zeke Correll is
the left guard. You made a lug nut reference and then talked about someone with the last name in a rug.
Yeah, I realized that as I was doing it. I knew I was going to go there, but Jarrett Patterson is the lug nut. And Zeke Correll is the left guard, talented kid. Their O-line's inexperienced in the sense of starts. Kane Madden has as many starts at Marshall as the rest of the O-line at Notre Dame has at Notre Dame that's starting. So that kind of gives you an idea of those numbers. I think it's 31 starts for Madden at Notre Dame, 31 starts for the rest of the O-line. Blake Fisher is a big-timer. He was coming out of high school. I think he's lived up to everything they expected. I don't think that's a matter of they're starting a freshman left tackle because, well, we have nobody else. I think it's a matter of they're starting a freshman left tackle because in 3 years he's going to be a top 10 pick type of guy. Mm-hmm. I think it's more one of those. So they're talented up front. If I was FSU, I would try to make the freshman left tackle uncomfortable immediately without hesitation, maybe overload him and just bring it after him and see if you can shake him a little. And you got to do something against their tight end, whether it's chipping him, whether it's, you know, just being really aggressive with him in the first 5 yards. You got to try to take him out of the game plan to some degree and force it on somebody else because he's a guy that knows he can do it. The Avery kid at wide receiver is not one that knows he can do it, but they don't have a lot of offensive skill other than running back, tight end, and that one wide receiver that has really done it at a high level. So I think you try to put the onus on those guys.
Going to Notre Dame's offensive line, because ultimately I think we both agree, and this is going to sound cliche, but it's going to be very true for this game. This game's going to be won in the trenches and how FSU's defense responds to Notre Dame's potential or assumed physicality up front. We know what Notre Dame wants to do. They want to run the ball a ton. They ran it right at FSU last year without much resistance. What was the final tally for rushing yards? Was it like 328 or something like that?
Yeah, it was 300+, which was just painful.
I'm throwing up a comment here by Gabe Torres. Says, I don't trust Notre Dame quarterback. If FSU can keep Notre Dame to under 500 rushing yards, I think FSU won't get blown out. Hopefully a little bit less than 500 rushing yards. But my point being is that FSU is going to field Notre Dame early on. Notre Dame is going to try to assert itself. We're expecting, you know, two tight ends. And basically, if you're Notre Dame, you want to force FSU to try to stop the run with, you know, 4-3, 3-4, whatever you want to say, personnel with its base defense. You don't want them to get to their defensive back rotation with that group being perceived better than last year. So that's going to be a big part of it. Going to the running game, Chris, I do want to say you touched on the offensive line and some of the guys they lost. They lost three players that were in the top 100 of the NFL draft on the offensive line alone last year. I'm going to go over the PFF grades for what the starting five was last year compared to this year, just to show what you're replacing.
Yeah.
From left to right, Notre Dame's PFF grades, and 80 is really, really good. 90 is elite, just for context. 89.9 at left tackle, 81.3 at left guard, 81.7 at center, 76.5 at right guard, 89.6 at right tackle. Your tackles were basically top 10 power five tackles last year. now coming up in 2021. Left tackle, not available. Chris mentions a true freshman, but one who very well may be a stud, but first game, we don't know. Left guard, 56.6. Center, returner, 81.7. Right guard is Kane Madden.
Love nut.
92.5 for Kane Madden. That's at Marshall, so group of five numbers. We expect Kane Madden to probably be a very good Power 5 player, but probably not going to be quite as dominant as he was against CUSA competition. And then right tackle, the original lug, but not the lug nut, 68.6. So the tackles, there's going to be a huge difference in terms of what you had in terms of experience last year. Potentially play, we'll see, but the experience drops off quite a bit. And left guard, certainly a big difference as well. So we'll see if Notre Dame can run effectively on FSU. But Chris, you mentioned they still have those two really good running backs at 1-2 punch. FSU is going to be asked to be physical early on. How do you think they're going to respond to that?
I'm very interested in that because the way preseason camp is, and not just solely for FSU, the way college football has done it, it's not near as physical as it was 10 years ago, or certainly not as it was 20 years ago when I started doing this. So there's not a ton of hitting. There's a lot of thudding, a lot of keep them on their feet, you know, don't get down. Once in a blue moon, you see a DJ Lundy fly out and put somebody on their rear end, but it doesn't happen a lot. So all of a sudden you roll out there on Saturday night, your juices are flowing, everybody's into it, and you got, you know, 5 300-pound guys up front trying to flatten you, and, you know, somebody shooting through the hole leading Kyron Williams, who's a big old back in his own right, trying to stop you. And all of a sudden you're trying to take that guy on one-on-one, and you've not hit somebody this hard since November of last year, or December last year, because of the scheduling. It's one of those things that I don't know how you do with it until you do it. It's, you know, watching Minnesota Ohio State last night, I think it was the first touchdown, the running touchdown for Ohio State.
Yeah.
Minnesota's defense was flat footed and just not super physical. And then the middle stretch of that game, Minnesota's defense was very physical, very good, very, very strong at the point of attack. Still allowed a lot of rushing yards, but they were much more physical. It's almost one of those things where it's like shaking away cobwebs. And I think that's one of those things that can harm a team. And, you know, Notre Dame comes out and runs it down FSU's throat first series and wins physically. You really have to see, do they respond? Response is such a big storyline with FSU, and it has been now for several years.
Mike Norvell loves yelling that out in the middle of practice.
Yeah, and he references it regularly. I mean, he talked yesterday in his last time talking to us before the game about there's going to be moments that don't go well in this game. It's about how we respond to that. That's one of those things I want to see. I am concerned about physicality in every facet of the game, and it's probably true for both sides of the ball. I just know Notre Dame is established as a physical bunch. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the DNA of the program under Brian Kelly. It's a standard that is there. Mike Norvell is trying to establish that standard here. Certainly last year's team was not physical enough far often enough. So it's one of those things you got to see. So that's one of those first quarter, I think we're going to have a pretty good idea of, as FSU ready to buck up and be physical. And I'm not talking like, you know, masculinity of, oh, I hit a guy, let me flex over. I'm talking play in, play out, gang tackling, hitting the guy, driving them back, finishing tackles, putting your nose in there on consecutive plays. Are they doing that? That's going to be the key to FSU kind of making Notre Dame earn it. Notre Dame's offense is going to have to earn everything they get for FSU to have a chance of pulling off the upset. If it's coming easy to Notre Dame, especially in the running game, it's game over. Because it's going to open up a passing game. It would be much better if FSU forces Notre Dame into a situation where the game has to be on Jack Cohn's shoulders. I'd feel a lot better about FSU's chances there of maybe making something happen.
Let's talk about Jack Cohn real quick. I did do something on Knowles 24/7 to kind of show some of the metrics that he has as a passer. I won't get too bogged down into the numbers right now. You can check it out on Knowles 24/7. Chris alluded to this. Like, we have radar charts and we have some passing bins, and the radar chart will show the frequency of throws, like how often he goes to certain areas of the field, and it'll be a deeper shade of yellow or whatever the color is for like a high propensity to throw in this area. When you see that, and that's just targets, it's almost 10 yards and below, with this couple of like going to 15 yards or so on the outskirts, on the perimeter a little bit. So when he was at Wisconsin in 2019, granted, different offense, different offensive coordinator, different personnel around him, but everything was living in that 10 yards or under area. I will say the passing bins show completion percentage or efficiency. You can kind of change the metric you're looking at to fit into the passing bin, but just completion percentage, it kind of marks it from green to red. Green is a high level of completion percentage compared to the rest of the country. Red would be below average. And to me, this was interesting. Jack Cohn's stuff on, you know, screens and then 10 yards or fewer, really, really bright green. Like, he was very efficient, you know, 80% in some areas. Oh, I think one area was like 89%. And then in the 70s, you know, between, you know, like 5 and 10 yards. So very efficient, very accurate within a short area of the field. And when you watch him play, you see that. That shows up at Wisconsin, that he makes quick decisions, he protects the football, and he's accurate, gets the ball out pretty quickly. But when you ask him to push the ball downfield a little bit, it gets dicier. The completion percentage beyond 10 yards drops to about 60%. A lot of red with all of his deeper throws that you see. And again, you watch that on film. Yeah, he can throw the ball and get it to a guy in one-on-one, but he's not someone who's going to, you know, drop it in a bucket and be super precise consistently if you get him to throw the ball downfield. So to me, and this is where I'm going to get into some of the game plan stuff, Chris, I think it's essential. You know, you always want to win first down. Kenny Dillingham talked about the importance of winning first down at the beginning of a series, yeah, no matter what. And that's on the FSU's offensive side of the ball. Conversely, other side defense, do you want to win early downs? FSU was really bad at getting off the field on third down, even when they had teams in third and long this year, or this past year. But this is where you want to live. This is what you want to do this weekend against Notre Dame, is to get Jack Cohen in third and seven, third and six, third and eight, and force him to beat you outside. Because we think the strengths perceived of this defense right now are going to be Jermaine Johnson, Kier Thomas, and whoever else you have rushing the quarterback, and potentially the cornerbacks and Travis Jay, Jarvis Brownlee, maybe Miko Dotson or Kevin Knowles or someone else in that regard.
Jerrion Jones.
Jerrion Jones as well, who's back and healthy. So that's what I would say. I think you have to see consistently is get them into third and long and then see what happens from there and apply pressure and get your best players in position to make plays.
You know, we saw 8 million times over the last month during situational football, and FSU did a lot of situational football in the preseason.
Cash
money
downs.
Down. Money
if,
down.
If you listen to this later, so, yeah, they call money down, cash downs.
Yeah, so it's a huge point of focus. But you got to get them there first. And as an offense, FSU wants to avoid getting there. Mm-hmm. But when you get there, you got to convert.
Because FSU was pretty abysmal in cash downs, third and long, especially last year. I think they'll be a little bit better this year for what it's worth, but it'd be hard to be much worse. They were dreadful in third and long on offense last year.
I think the things that will frustrate the staff if it happens in this game, I think there's a handful of them. They're expecting some shortcomings. They know right. What their football team is. Pre-snap penalties offensively. Kenny Dillingham may blow out his other knee. sorry, Kenny.
One of my favorite parts of preseason camp has been Kenny's no longer on crutches, but when Kenny Dillingham was on the crutches and he saw something he didn't like, he would just take the crutches, throw them, and start screaming and running and limping and would like forget that he had an injury. But the emphatic crutch throw is, to me, a very effective teaching tool. I liked it. It was a nice prop.
Pre-snap penalties, not finishing runs. They will be very, very aggravated offensively if they don't finish runs and defensively if they don't tackle guy backwards. Those are things that they have hammered on all spring, all preseason. It's been constant. I think another one is obviously special teams. Hey, I love you, Czar. Keep that kind of energy. Whoa, 79, I like not it. Here for it.
He's got the BDE right now.
Special teams, another area we've seen a boatload of in the preseason. It's an area where I think FSU believes they can exploit something and maybe have an advantage. We saw last year them block, what, 5 kicks, I think it was, on the year. They need to be better in the return game than they were last year. I think they believe they will be. Punting, I'm not concerned with.
All the returners were hurt last year, pretty much, which did not help, or were not 100%. That did not help with the explosive plays.
Okay, Mastermon has been very good in the preseason, kicking as far as field goal kicking. Fingers crossed, it's been pretty effective in the preseason. They're going with Ryan Fitzgerald here. They believe that he's the one. They have confidence in it. Hopefully that holds true in a game. I hope for Fitz's sake it does. Area that's hugely important. I think you want to see a lot of success in special teams. Basically winning the hidden yardage game in that sense. I think those are three things that FSU has to do very well that are going to play in it. But the third down comes down to avoiding screwing something up in the prior two downs on either side of ball, and that's giving away free yards with penalties. I mean, to harken back to a game last night, Ohio State, Minnesota, when that game swung, was back-to-back penalties by Minnesota's offense. And this is after a series when Ohio State pass interference extended a series for Minnesota and gave them the benefit. But you had Sorry.
Oh, God, me. He's dying. COVID.
No, after the play, you had an extra shove by an O-lineman onto the pile. Penalty. Next play, Carlos Dunlap from IMG gets called for a yank. Clearly a hold on an inside run situation. Next thing you know, it's 3rd and 30. You're running a little 3-yard run to punt it away. That game very much flipped in that moment. Ohio State's offense got going again, kind of kept the momentum of the second half going, and then, boom, they run away with it. Minnesota was in a position to try to pull off an upset, and then so quickly you see them kind of sabotage themselves, and the better team goes and takes the win. And that's one of those things where FSU cannot sabotage itself on Sunday evening.
Did you see UCF with the comeback win last night?
I didn't make it to the end. I saw it when it was, I think it was 14-0 when I quit watching / fell asleep. So, yeah, they were losing 14-0 to the Fighting Hank Bachmeyers.
I didn't even make it to kickoff. And I had a dream that UCF was down 3-2. It turns out it was a little more high scoring than that. Ooh, look at this nice compliment. Michael Stevens says, Chris is just a flow of information. He is.
Appreciate it.
He is. Very informative. I love just throwing something to Chris and be like, hey, just talk about this. And shotgun. Or a machine gun, I guess. Shotgun would be
yeah, shotgun's a machine that fast, buddy.
I mean, if they do, it'd be a problem for whatever zombie tries to break into my house. Significance of a win, Chris, or the impact of a potential loss. So we mentioned the recruits on campus, yeah. Right? And obviously that's going to be big. And this is a team that hasn't won a season opener since 2016. So it's been a minute. What would a win mean for this program? And conversely, how do you think this team responds to a loss? I guess it depends on what kind of loss, right?
I think a win means everything. I think Mike Norvell and his staff feel a hell of a lot better about where they're at in the timeline. From a recruiting standpoint, we're going to get some emotional decisions if they're pulling off a win in that stadium, because that place is going to be bananas. And well, I'm here for it. You know, I got 11 official visitors and probably ballpark of at least 100 kids coming in. There's going to be somebody that's like, I want to be here. I want to do this. That happens. They may not stick with it in 6 months, but they're going to love it in the moment. No, a win would be huge. I think a win would change the attitude and the feeling among some on the roster, especially some of those guys who have now been here 3+ years, of we can do this. I think last year UNC was a nice shot in the arm and a positive moment, but it was in the kind of drab of a bad season. And they knew, you know, I don't think they believed they could sustain that week in, week out because of what was going on last year. I think a win out of the gate like that this year, and the fact that you have essentially a softie in week two, it might create some real positive momentum, might give you a little bit of a belief of, hey, we can do something here. We can win more than people are expecting, 9-10, you know, get in that flirtation zone. And sometimes belief goes a long way. A loss, I think it's expected by most. I think it's more a matter of you need to go out and compete. You need to show that you've improved. Is your defense better? Has to be. Can't get by with what it was last year. Just can't live that life again. And I don't think they'll live that life again. I think they are a better defense because of the fact they had a spring, they had a preseason, and they have a lot more pieces and a lot more weapons, and I think they'll have a better pass rush, which is a huge key component to so many pieces of what the defense does. Yeah. So I feel good about that. But you got to lose in a manner where you competed. I think it would be awesome if it's a competitive game going in the fourth quarter for FSU. I think that's a major win. Obviously, I think it will create some disappointment if they were to lose in a competitive game like that. But I think it creates some resolve and some, you know, we weren't that far off. If we did a few things differently, we would be better. Doors get blown off, you get your butt kicked. It's pretty concerning. It's one of those things where I still worry about the mental conditioning of some components of this team. And given we're dealing with, what is it, 59% essentially new faces? Is that what the percentage of that?
So for the two deep, for the starting lineup, it's like 58%, I think, right on the dot there. Yeah.
So those guys necessarily don't live that life, but on a team where you need every piece of depth you can have because you don't have enough at this point in time, you got to have some of those pieces still buy in. And I just think if you get your doors blown off, there's some guys that are going to be kind of like, you know, same stuff, different season. And you just don't want that. So I obviously don't want to see a blowout. I don't think they get blown out. I did not to rush too far ahead.
Don't spoil it.
I picked them to lose by double digits, but only 10. Oh, I think you can be competitive and still lose by 10 personally.
I will get to my thoughts on the game in a little bit. I won't jump ahead like Chris. You want to play some buy or Sinone? I know you do.
I'm buying that all day. Sonone that for sure.
Bye, baby, bye.
I am Sononing it, but not.
No. I'm going to Sonone it. I'm definitely Sononing that. Big Sonone.
I'd buy that.
Yeah.
I Sonone both of you.
You can't out Sonone us.
We're doing a little buyer Sonone.
Find Sonone.
This segment is going to die because you are allowing the fans to do it.
I buy.
This whole segment's deteriorating.
I'll do it just to appease.
You do not want to play Buyer Sonone, but you will play, and I appreciate that. All right, let's go. A little Buyer Sonone is going to be a blend of game preview, season preview, opinions, maybe a little fact bombs. All right, here we go. Buy or Sonone. Jordan Travis starts for FSU on Sunday.
I'm buying that.
I will buy that as well. I think he's been the most consistent quarterback in preseason camp, the most consistent quarterback since spring. But let me counter with this one. Buy or Sonone, McKenzie Milton gets at least two series at quarterback.
I don't know if they do the whole series thing. I don't know if it's this is Jordan series, this is McKenzie series. I'm interested how they play that component. I guess I'll go with buy because I do expect him to play, and he'll probably play enough where it constitutes two series. But I don't know that it's necessarily the third series of this game belongs to this quarterback type of scenario. I don't know that they do that.
But, man, if it was the other way around, so I think it'd be easier if it was we were going in with the assumption that McKenzie Milton was starting, which can still happen, too. But right now I think we're both on J-Trav Hive for starting. But if McKenzie Milton is a starting quarterback, you can say we sprinkle in Jordan Travis for a couple plays here and there within a series. I don't know if you can do that with McKenzie Milton. Like, does taking Jordan Travis out of the series and then putting McKenzie Milton in change a whole lot? Are you going from a change up to a fastball or curveball, vice versa? Like, I don't know if it.
I think to some degree you might do it depending on what happened the prior series offensively. Do you want to have a little bit more time to talk to this quarterback that you have taken out to put in the other quarterback? Do you want to have more time to talk, give him a second to collect himself? I think there's some of that too. I don't think FSU is stuck in the belief that they have to play only one quarterback, that they have to be a one quarterback team. You know, some teams want to evoke confidence in a singular guy, so they're going to stick through with him thick and thin, all the stuff. And if they pull him, they're pulling him. Like, he's not going back. I don't view FSU as playing that kind of tennis match with their quarterbacks. I think it's more both of these guys can help us win. We're going to use both. The reason I believe that Jordan is your quarterback is one, most reps, giving him most rhythm and timing of anybody in the preseason. I think that's essential and very, very important, especially in a game where I do think timing is going to be such a key component of attacking aggressive, talented defense. But I think Milton can go in there at times if you want to give Travis a series just to collect himself or catch a breather, or if you just want to change it up a little bit or give Notre Dame a different look, get them uncomfortable to some degree, because well, they're teeing off, they're doing well against this when Travis is in, but the offense may look a tad bit different with Milton. I think it's more about kind of altering the rhythm of how the game is flowing more so than maybe feeling like you're latching your wagon to a certain quarterback horse. I don't think it's one of those where they're playing favorites. I think it's more trying to keep Notre Dame off balance.
All right, buy or Sonone, McKenzie Milton starts at least five games for FSU this season. Good one. It's a stumper.
For now, I'll go Sonone.
Okay. I don't know. I think I'll go Sonone as well, but I think it'll be close. I think we'll see both start throughout the course of the year. Kesna Lawrence asks, buy or Sonone, FSU gets at least one interception off of Notre Dame. I'm going to buy that. I think this defense has been super aggressive and has been pretty good at catching the football this preseason.
Well, he went one plus, so I feel like he's saying over one. I'll go with push. I think they get at least one, but I'm not convinced they get multiple.
Gotcha.
I think Notre Dame's going to be run first and very careful with the ball.
That is a Jack Cohen special. I think the defense has been really good at that aspect this preseason, and I could just feel it. I could feel it all the way down to my plums, Chris.
Who's getting it?
Travis J. I'll go with Travis
J. I'll go Kevin Knowles.
Well, he has
Him and Shaheem Brown tend to have a nose for the ball. I don't think Brown gets enough reps to improve that possibility. I think Knowles may as a nickel corner.
Yeah, I feel really solid about the future of the DB room with those two. They've been really nice this preseason. Hunter Washington has his moments, probably a year or two away.
And I love that kid. He drives people nuts on the field. He's the defense's version of Jackson West.
Chippy. Yeah, you got two chippy guys. Maybe those two chippy players get into it every now and then at practice. But you know what?
Pretty fun. I'm here for it.
More of that is needed. in this program right now. Byers Sanone, Andrew Partman leads FSU in receiving yards this season.
Mm-hmm. I'll buy that. I think he has at least a couple really big games to help fluff the numbers a little bit. I'm interested to see how consistent he can be.
I'll buy that too. I think he'll be, I think, like you said, he'll have some games where he's kind of disappears a little bit and some games where he puts up, you know, 100, 150 receiving yards and goes off a little bit. Rob Alvarez asks, will Jermaine Johnson get a sack on the freshman offensive tackle? I'll buy that too. Byers Sanone. Let's see. Oh, and by the way, people listening or watching, you can go ahead and subscribe to us on YouTube and watch live videos, get notifications when we go live, whether it's a Q&A podcast, a live podcast recording like this. Sometimes Josh and I will just kind of fire up the YouTube and go and answer questions, and maybe I'll have an adult beverage when I do so. So yeah, go ahead, subscribe. The kids say smash the like button. I don't think it matters how hard you you smash, or you could just like lightly like tap the like and subscribe buttons. That's fine too. It all works.
On that last question, I always think back to Rodney Hudson when he got thrown out there for the first time. Mm-hmm. He just froze up completely. And he was very good the rest of the game. I believe it was at Clemson, if I recall correctly. But like first drive, he straight up froze on the field. And Rodney Hudson's arguably the best center in the NFL going on a decade of in a decade the NFL. Of, yeah. So like he's super good, but the first moment for a guy, it's still a moment. You know, who was it? Robert Cooper the other day who said, you know, yep. My first time out there, I just forgot what the play was.
His first play, yeah, it was the Virginia Tech game. His first play was a missed assignment because he just got up there and froze.
So Blake Fisher is thinking he's supposed to go forward instead of pass pro, and Jermaine Johnson just goes flying by him, and there you go. You got your sack. So I feel like that's one of those things that can easily happen.
We'll see how it manifests itself on Sunday, but Jermaine Johnson is talking the talk right now. We'll see if he walks the walk. But he
is in desperate need of hitting somebody. He's been insanely frustrated by having to let up on trying to hit quarterbacks in the preseason.
He does not seem like someone who's going to shrink in the moment based on how he's carrying himself right now. We'll see on Sunday, but there's reason to be a little excited about what he's going to do. All right, just a couple more left here. We're about to wrap up. Byers Sanone, the entire running back room is out due to COVID this week.
I'll Reddit.
Sanone in the Reddit rumors.
A majority of the depth chart at that position practiced the last 2 days we were at practice.
I don't want to say days or numbers. I'm going to get ourselves in trouble here. I expect the running back room to be pretty intact and healthy. And yeah, we'll just put it that way. By or Sanone, what is FSU's season record? I know it's not a by or Sanone answer, but, you know, play the game.
I'm living that 6-6 life.
All right. I am too. I would say this, Chris, back in like maybe the first like 7 or 10 days of camp, I was thinking 4 to 5 wins. I think
after the Tuesday where the 2 reserve quarterbacks were dreadful, the 8 turnover day.
And the centers were bad. And it was in that range. It was in that range. Now I think 6-6 is probably reasonable still right now.
Maurice Smith is fine snapping it. He has a moment here and there like most centers do. But in general, Maurice is a cool, confident center.
Mm-hmm.
But man, after that, it's a big concern.
Drops off. Bavion Johnson's okay. He's not as disastrous like a couple of years ago, but there may be one or two moments if he has to snap the ball out that it could get a little dicey. And then after that, man, it gets really problematic. So just something to monitor and to watch. So hopefully that does not come to fruition for Florida State. All right, last Byers Sanone I got for you here. Byers Sanone, FSU is more likely to beat Notre Dame than it is to lose by 2 scores.
I'd agree with that. Well, I picked them to lose by 10, so technically that's 2 scores.
2 scores means
but 14. But I thought they were going more with 14. I think it's more likely FSU wins and loses by 14 or more.
All right, Chris, let's get to season prediction. Game prediction, and then we'll get out of here.
I believe I went with 34-24. It's up on the front page now. A lot of what I talked about, I kind of covered in there. Obviously, for FSU to pull off this upset, they have to be effective at not getting penalties against themselves, getting a couple turnovers, giving themselves extra possessions, finishing plays on both sides of the ball, winning one-on-ones on offense and on defense, bothering Jack Cohn, taking away the running game of Notre Dame. Offensively, FSU, I think they have to play into Notre Dame's aggressiveness and kind of catch them off guard at times. I think that's attacking the middle of the field when the linebackers are flying in. I think that's doing stuff off the edge of the line when an end is crashing down on the quarterback, you know, who is supposed to pick up a tight end or a running back coming out of backfield, or the outside backers gambling, or, you know, a safety comes crashing down the middle of the field so it can get there and hit it. It's going to be a matter of FSU putting together drives in the sense of draining some clock, keeping the clock balanced, but they got to hit shot plays. If they hit four or five shot plays, they'll have a shot of pulling this off, but they're going to have to hit at a pretty high rate. I don't think they take those a ton. I think they set them up a lot. When they come along, they have to hit them. But at the end of the day, I think Notre Dame's a better team, better depth, a better kind of idea of who and what they are established. I think that defense is going to bother FSU. I think FSU is going to have some trouble of moving the ball at times. It would be very beneficial if FSU comes out a gate effective offensively instead of kind of having to play catch up. I don't think they're built to play catch up. But yeah, I picked Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame's a better team. I think Notre Dame has a real shot of going 10-2 or better this year. You know, I like that team. I think I'm bullish on a guy like Kevin Austin. I think he can be pretty damn good. I remember him as a high school prospect. You know, and they got some other pieces that will help free him up and give him opportunities to make plays. It's more a matter of can Jack Cohn make Kevin Austin as effective as Kevin Austin can be.
I remember, well, okay, so real quick on the message board yesterday, someone presented a question to us, Chris. Is it basically
positional matchups?
Yeah, positional matchups. If you just go like quarterback compared to quarterback, not even across the ball, but quarterback to quarterback, who's better, running back to running back, all the way down the line. What do we have? Like FSU maybe has three of those positions where we feel like they're better at.
Yeah, like I'm no lover of Jack Cohn. I think Travis's athleticism and escapability is interesting. I feel like going push is kind of a move on my part, but I would probably go push at best, mainly because I need to see Jack Cohn in person. I don't watch a lot of Wisconsin football outside of here and there when they're on Fox.
What?
Yeah, I know, shocking. I like entertaining myself, not being bored. Running back, I think Notre Dame's certainly better. Wide receiver, even though Notre Dame's super experienced, I think Kevin Austin is probably more talented than anybody FSU has. And if we're including tight ends in that dynamic, then it definitely goes to Notre Dame's favor. If we're doing tight ends straight up, it's Notre Dame. O-line, I still think it's Notre Dame, despite the fact they're inexperienced in breaking in new bodies. FSU would love to have Kane Madden, for example.
Yeah. For context, and this isn't really a shock, Dylan Gibbons has been solid for FSU's preseason camp. He would have been a high-end rotational piece for Notre Dame, but I don't think he was assured to start for Notre Dame. And he's coming to camp basically in like 2 or 3 months, taking over a starting job for FSU. So just for context of what the offensive line discrepancy is like right now between the two programs.
Yeah, and FSU, you know, they keep saying 8 or 9 O-linemen. No, I don't think they have 8 or 9 at this point. I think they might have 7. You know, Dante Lucas, I would definitely say is a 6. Bavion is a serviceable 7. He's a swing guy on the interior. I don't love anybody at their tackle depth. I think they are going to have to slide Love Taylor out the tackle if they were have to do that. I don't think Lloyd Willis is ready for the show, and I don't think there's another capable body right now. So it's still a thin bunch, and it's an area where you got to deal with it sometimes, and it gets real dicey real quick. D-line, I still think Notre Dame's better, even though I do think FSU's vastly improved there, but I'm not fully in on FSU's D-line until the time comes that they've done it in games. But I'm Dennis Briggs' high fan club. I mean, I'm here for it. I love the kid. I think he's developed into the player they recruit him to be, and I think he's certainly the image of what FSU future defensive tackles under Mike Norvell and his staff are going to be. And they kind of said that this week. I think Adam Fuller, in fact, said that. Jermaine Johnson, we talked about earlier. I think Keir Thomas is also a big key to everything they do. And I think Marcus Cushing is a big piece because last year they didn't have that third capable body that could go to when a guy needed a moment to get catch his breath and such. I think Cushing is a big help in that regard this year. And Quayshon Fuller, to a degree, behind Keir Thomas is a big body to hold set the edge. Linebacker is still a massive concern for FSU, so I'd give Notre Dame the edge there. DBs, Kyle Hamilton's better than anybody FSU has in the secondary, in my opinion. So I'd give the edge to Notre Dame there. Special teams, you know, Notre Dame's super experienced in that group with punter and kicker. They're pretty sound in that group. You know, I'd still go there till FSU starts knocking down field goals with some consistency. So, you know, I'm not trying to be a downer or a homer either which way with that stuff, but I just think Notre Dame is a more talented football team. And there's a reason Notre Dame is number 9 preseason, despite losing 9 guys to the NFL draft.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is all on paper, the exercises that we're doing. We'll see what happens, obviously, on Sunday. I know it's a boring answer to say we'll see, but it's the first game of the season. Last year was so weird in terms of being able to judge what this FSU team can be. They've overhauled almost half the starting lineup in the last year and a half. You have a full offseason now that you did not have last year with Mike Norvell, Adam Fuller, the strength staff. So there's certainly a chance for a huge jump for FSU. We'll see what happens on Sunday. I went with FSU losing 31-23. And I think that we'll see this FSU team compete. I think we'll see it go well into the second half. I just, Notre Dame's experience across the board on defense and the way they're going to attack FSU, their strengths and their matchups on offense to FSU's weaknesses. I just don't think it portends to FSU being able to pull off the upset. But again, we'll see on Sunday. All right, Christopher, anything else before we get out of here?
No, I hope people enjoy themselves. I hope that place is loud. I hope it's fun. I think the weather's supposed to be good, knock on wood. I'm ready for it. I'm looking forward to enjoying a good Saturday slate of football with some friends and then taking it in Sunday and work until the wee hours of Monday morning.
All right, everyone. Enjoy. Safe travels to Tallahassee for coming up here. Hopefully you have fun on Sunday. We'll talk to you, I guess, probably wee hours of Sunday morning, maybe Monday morning. On the benches, we do a live rapid reaction podcast. So check us out then. Until then, we'll see you in a few days.
Baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.